guys have multiplied.
Are they still there?
Interestingly enough, they're not in Shishmaref, but they are in Brevik Mission, which is kind of across the peninsula, and they're still teaching. I think Steve's getting ready to be a principal. And actually, since then, they've adopted two Alaska Native kids. Because one of the problems with living in Alaska is that there's very little to do during the winters, and that's really hard on the teenagers. So there's a lot of unwed mothers. And so they adopted two of their students' children and are raising them.
So they've been there how many years?
Yeah, they started in 2005, so I guess they've been there almost 9 years. So if you're still feeling young and vivacious, if you teach in Alaska for 8 years, then you get vested in the retirement program. And it's really great, but you have to survive for 8 years.
Any place in Alaska?
Pretty much. Of course, it's harder to get a job in southern Alaska, where it's, like, kind of normal. But, yeah, if you want to go to Nome or to Shishmaref or any place that's way out of the way, after 8 years, you are set.
And if you get a certain amount of money each year just for living in Alaska?
Yeah, and that pretty much pays for the increased cost of living.
Okay. Do they come home? Or is that
part? Yeah, they actually do come down to the Lower 48 every summer. They don't spend summers there at all. And before they adopted children, they'd like go to Thailand and Egypt. They just save up all their money because, you know, there's nothing to do up there. So you just save up all of your money and they would go visit all kinds of places. Like Colleen, the girl with the brown hair, the brown curly hair. She and Angie went to Thailand together. I think they went to Spain. But yeah, that's kind of the normal thing. You go there for the awful part of Alaska, you know, the 9 months of debilitating cold, and then you leave for the nice 3 months when the sun's always up.
How did the film project go about?
Well, I was...
I missed the very beginning. Were you the photographer?
Yeah, I was the guy behind the camera the entire time. But yeah, when I was in Alaska, I was doing my PhD work on narrative studies, and I was studying the way that teachers tell stories. And while I was doing that, I was part of a grant where we tried to see if palm pilots could be a good teaching method in rural Alaska. So I would go to all these little villages as my job, teaching teachers how to use technology. And while I was there, I met the first girl, whom you didn't see, Darcy, who was having a terrible time. It was her first year of teaching. It was her first job teaching. Mm. She had just gotten out of college, and she just barely made it to the end of the year. She's like, I am out of here. And then Colleen, as you can see, was much more suited to the job. She said, hey, the next two people who are coming up are Mormons from Seattle, who just got out of BYUI, and they just got married, and this is their first job. And I said, this is perfect. And so the education department had a nice camera. I begged it off of them. And so every time I would go up to Shishmaref to teach people how to use palm pilots, I'd just bring my camera with me. I'd stay there for a week, follow them around, see what they were doing. But I met them down in Seattle. I followed them up from Seattle to Anchorage to Nome. It was a lot of fun.
You had a job teaching people how to use palm pilots, and that's how you got into this?
Yeah, that's how it happened. It was strange. It's like the entire world just aligned so that I could make this little project. It was really interesting. Kind of the best year of my life, besides those other 2 years that I was supposed to really like.
Are you ready to go up there and teach, Ray?
No, I would never teach in Alaska. I don't have what it takes. That's what I found out. While my wife and I were finishing up our PhDs, we're like, you know, we could go teach in Alaska for 8 years. We'd have our retirement all put together, and then we could just rest. And then I finished making this movie, and I was like, honey, you can go by yourself, but there's no way I would survive. There were other people that I interviewed for this. You know, that there were a little sprinkling of stories. So there was one woman who went out to be a principal in Yukon Flats, and we had this great big interview with her. She was going to go out there, and she was going to do great things, and she came back after 2 months. Mm-hmm. And there was another couple who went out, came back. They thought that they were going to love it. They, like, got right into the community. They were right there in the sweat lodges, you know, everything. And they came back the next year. So there were all these kind of we stuck it out, but we're not going back stories. And you saw Angie at the beginning, that girl had dressing up and so happy and ebullient and optimistic, and how they kind of toughened her up. And now she lives in Alaska. She's a real life teacher. She actually made it. Steve's still the same guy he always was.
So what does it take? You said you don't have space. So what does it take?
It takes an incredible amount of energy. Because of course while you're up there it's winter. So there's no sun to help you out. And it's always cold. And of course when you're first up there you know nobody. And you're surrounded by 300 miles of tundra. They were in Shishmaref, which is about a 45-minute flight from Nome. And so the only way that you could get out, except by plane, was like a week on the snow machine. That's the only contact with civilization that they had. So you have to have an insane amount of energy. You have to have an insane amount of emotional energy, because you're also going into an Aboriginal culture. You don't realize that because you're going to Alaska, but you're going into a place where everybody's related, where they're sequestered off from the rest of the world, where they have their own culture, their own family lines, their own way of doing things. For example, one of the main things that really freaks people out when they go up there to teach, or even just as white people, it freaked me out the first time I went up, was that nobody talks to you. And you're like, what is the matter with you people? You're a bunch of sociopaths. I say nice things. You know, I'm a Mormon. So I know how to be a missionary. I know how to come to you and talk to you and make you talk back to me. And they just wouldn't do it. Until you find out that when you live on a tiny little island out in the middle of the Bering Sea, and you live with the same people for 70 years, what you actually do to get to know people is you watch them, because you had years to do it with. And you know their father, and you know their mother, and you know their grandfathers and their grandmothers. So you have this long line of history, and you're just in this tiny little part of history. And so the way you get to know people is you watch them. You see how they behave. And so all these white people come in, and they're like, hi, how you doing? Let's talk. Let's get to know each other over, you know, the course of 15 minutes, and we'll be best buds. And they're like, where are you from? And, yeah. So, like, one of the things that kind of hit Angie hard during Christmas was that they had a big potlatch. Everybody got together in the church, and they had food. And there were no tables that were available when she had gotten her food, and she and Steve were just standing there looking around. And, you know, if you were a Mormon gathering or something, you'd be like, come on in! But, you know, all the tables were spoken for. They had families. Those families had been there for, you know, 300 years. And, you know, they just felt completely left out. So you have to have a really thick skin to be able to go there and let them watch you for 9 months while they see into your soul to see what you actually do, because they don't care what you say. They care what you do. It's kind of like what that guy says at the end. If you can become a part of the community, they'll let you in, but it's like trial by fire. Yeah.
Are there missionaries there?
Not in Shishmaref. A really interesting thing happened in Alaska during the 1890s. It was called the Soul Rush. And what happened was a bunch of Christian churches realized when Alaska became a state that there was all this ground, this new ground for them to be able to start putting together churches and converts. And so all these churches rushed in, and it was like this big dogfight. And so they actually split up Alaska amongst themselves. And so, for example, you saw the pastor who was in there, who was showing her the seal oil and stuff like that, and the King Reed stuff. So he's the Lutheran pastor. And so Chishmaref is a Lutheran village. That's just how it goes. So the way that Steve and Angie go to church is they do it by phone. They have a ward in Anchorage that has a conference line phone system that's just hooked to their microphone. And they go and they listen, and they have little lessons over the phone. So there are Mormons in all of the little villages, usually teachers, but no, there aren't any missionaries at all. There's, I mean, that village is one of the larger ones. It had 800 people. Most of them are like 125 to 300 people. So. And if you went in there saying, all right, we're going to take you back from the church that, you know, runs the town, That would be hard.
So there are missionaries in Anchorage, I presume.
Oh, sure, yeah. There are missionaries in larger white people areas like Anchorage and Juneau and Fairbanks and Whitehorse and Tok and stuff like that. But not in any of the villages.
The villages are just kind of a block of what area ended up taking over your area? What region ended up taking over your area?
That's what happened. You are who you are because of what happened in 1890. Yeah.
Was this your first documentary film?
My first feature length one, yeah. I made a couple of shorts before that.
How long is this one?
This is 58 minutes. And it started out as 125 hours of raw material.
125 hours. So, who did the editing? You did all of it.
I did everything, yeah.
What's your next project?
I don't have the resources or the time to do this anymore. I take care of the family now. This was something I could do because I lived in Alaska and the whole world fell into place around it. It would be fun. Are any of you into film? No. And it takes so much of your life, right? You like start the editing, and 5 hours later, you wake up.
I was wondering, with your studies of filming, the culture up there was of interest.
Oh, I would. If somebody offered me the chance, if somebody gave me a camera and said, "Go up there," I would go in a second. I loved it up there. Even the cold. I actually loved the cold.
It's just the teaching that you wouldn't do.
No.
But going would, up there is okay.
Oh, yeah, going up there is okay, if I could be a filmmaker.
That's because you were. What was the longest you were ever in the village for?
A week at a time.
Yeah, so it's a different thing.
Oh, yeah, completely different.
Yeah. Back to the religion, the Russians had quite a bit of success.
It's
they owned Alaska.
It's true.
And the Aleutians and the Panhandle.
Yeah, absolutely. And if you go in the Panhandle, you'll see that all sorts of Russian Orthodox churches, but they had a completely different way of approaching them. Whereas most of the Christian churches would go in and say, all right, we're here to teach you English so that you know God's language. The Russians actually went in and learned their language and integrated with them before they ever brought it.
They sent some to medical school in St. Petersburg.
Yeah.
They were quite advanced.
Oh yeah, they were quite humanitarian, quite humane compared to the rest of Christianity. You had a question?
Well, yeah. I was wondering, when they're so remote like that, I mean, is there any industry? I mean, what are you educating them to do, or how do they survive?
Yeah, I asked that question of the district. I forget what he's called. The guy who's the superintendent, I said, you know, these people mostly stay on their little island their entire lives. What are you hoping that this world will do? Mm-hmm. And he said, essentially, he wants to make it. One of the terrible things that happened in the history of the United States was that people from the dominant European culture came in to Aboriginal cultures and sort of decimated them, took away everything, and sort of pushed them around because they felt like they could do it. They felt like they had the power. He said, I'm hoping that what this does is gives them tools so that they can stand up and sort of take charge of what's going on again. And also to give them at least the opportunity to be able to go and do something else if they wanted to. But yeah, I thought about that a lot because, like, the first thing you saw them learning in there, how to cut up a seal, that's probably one of the best things that you can learn if you live in Shishmaref. How to cut up a seal, how to fish, how to cut up a whale. You remember that stuff they were cutting up that had a really thick black part on the end? That was whale that they were cutting up. And then when the girl was almost vomiting, that was walrus. I tried it all.
So the children just grow up learning trades that have to do with their survival to stay in the area? Don't some of the children aspire to leave the area and do something else?
They're an interesting group. They actually kind of consider us crazy. Because Steve and Angie left their homes, they left their families, to go be with complete strangers in a completely alien atmosphere. And to these people, family really does come first. When you're family, you're family. And that's it. You grow up with these people. They actually have a tradition where they name newly born children after people who have recently died. And so it's almost as if the same people have been sort of circulating on this island for hundreds and hundreds of years. And so they don't really see a reason to go out and do anything. I mean, if you know how to find it, the tundra is an abundant source of food. It's just swimming beneath the ice. All you have to do is go find it, cut it up, eat it, be willing to eat it. And everybody who matters is there. So, yeah, from our point of view, we were like, well, you know, go out, look and look in the world, find your fortune. It's just not part of their narrative. Their narrative is, here we are, and that's good enough.
Is the population stable or very?
Yeah, it's
so
it's
people must
stable.
Die young or
yeah.
Growing population.
Yeah, it grows slightly. One of the things about Shishmaref is it's actually getting eaten away because it's kind of a glorified sandbar, and the winter comes later and leaves sooner than it has before. So during the year that I was really intensely there, at least 15 feet of shoreline had been eaten away, and houses mm-hmm. were falling into. So they're actually going to be moving.
Yes, they didn't seem particularly camera shy. What did they think of you?
Who? Steve and Angie?
No. Oh. The students. The students.
Oh, that's an interesting question. Yeah, I was actually called Steve the cameraman. Because, so the first part that we saw with the blonde girl who was having a difficult time with all of those kids, I had been up there for a year before Steve and Angie had gotten there. So they were used to me. They had watched me for a year running around with my cybernetic extension. And so, yeah, they weren't shy because they had watched me for a year.
Would they like to see themselves? Would they say, show us what you took? Or?
No, not at all.
Really?
Yeah, they aren't into looking at themselves. At all, they're at least back then. They were just utterly different as far as pictures were concerned. Yeah, it was so strange being with those people. They gave me such an interesting view of life.
Did they have TV?
After a fashion, mostly DVDs. Mostly they watched DVDs at their store. They would go rent them. Yeah.
I moved to Koyak Island, Alaska in 1968, and we came back for about a year and a half, but we spent 5 years there, full time, and I did teach school somewhat, but that was all before all these kickbacks. But I was working in a restaurant, because the school had ended and I was in there my first day, and the waitress said, I'm from Seattle, and Seattle gets way too big, so I come to Kodiak, and Kodiak is too big, and so I go to Nome.
Oh my gosh.
And then she said, what's the other?
And then she probably went to Barrow.
Barrow, yeah.
Is that where she went?
Yeah. Actually, I don't think there was a restaurant in Barrow. She was quite a waitress. And she said, and then it just gets so to me, I have to get back to Seattle. So that was her life.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah.
Yeah, my family moved to Fairbanks in 1950.
Oh.
When I was in the fourth grade, and we had no medical water and all that stuff. We lived for 5 years. My father was a bush pilot part of the time.
That's cool.
So,
That's where I came closest to dying.
It's dangerous.
It's really.
I think about 7 years ago.
Oh, yeah.
But I worked with a guy whose parents taught in that southwestern area of Alaska.
Uh-huh.
School teachers out there in those Indian villages.
Uh-huh.
It's
a beautiful place.
I'll tell them about your
experience. Yeah, I do.
Well, what are you teaching them, basically? Reading, writing, and a little bit of world history? I mean, how much are they going to know to just maintain where they're staying? What grade level do they even take them to?
Yeah, they actually have a unique system there. They have levels, so you don't necessarily go from first to second to third grade. You go first to second to third level, depending on what you know, and so they have kind of mixed classrooms,
uh-huh.
And depending on how quickly you go, to different classes and stuff like that. And so they will take you through the entire high school curriculum, including like social studies and geography and stuff like that. But mostly what sticks is just being able to read, being able to write, and being able to do math and all the other things that would save them while we would all die out in the middle of the tundra that they just learned because they go out in the boats, they go out on the ice and stuff like that. So that's what really keeps what they learn without any effort. It's just that they want to go out and do something in the larger culture, the larger European-American culture, that they need all of those skills. I am insanely flattered that you guys would come and watch my movie. All those other interesting things, and you came and watched it. Thank you. This has made my week. Thanks very much.
You're used to the word tundra. My recollection of it is the dirt area where there's no trees and stuff. Not the cedar.
There's no
leaves. What I think of tundra. It's the land next to
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, it's true. So, yeah. Yeah, so the Bering Peninsula at the top. That would be
the Bering Peninsula itself, if you like, call that the Tundra area.
Right. Yeah.
And all of northern Alaska.
Yeah. Yeah. And then Fairbanks
there
is Tiago, right?
There's some mountains over there.
Yeah, there's a few. I didn't know that you lived in Fairbanks. That's where I lived when I was doing all of my studies.
Okay.
I was in Fairbanks.
We were 2 years there.
Thank you for coming.
Yeah.
You're welcome.
For 2 years
good.
There.
I'm glad you liked it.
Then 2 years down in Anchorage.
Oh, and then you're in Anchorage.
Yeah, but there's a, like I said, that was 1950. That's
right.
Fourth grade. But those are formative years.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and this is the Korean War period.
Oh, my goodness.
And I kid people because I'm very conservative.
Yeah.
And so people say, why do I stay at Mormon? Why do I keep coming to sense of being insulted as a Republican all the time, or a libertarian, you're both Republican.
Well, you noticed that Steve was a diehard Republican, right?
Yeah.
And Angie was liberal, and Steve was very conservative. He had a very interesting marriage.
Yeah. But coming around here, you know, I'm thinking back, why am I conservative? Todd, my cousin, is liberal and so forth. But I think part of it is, you know, being in Alaska.
Oh, sure.
During
yeah.
the Korean War period, you know, the war going on against, the Soviet Union and communism and the Cold
yeah,
War.
Totally. I can see how that would do it.
I think a lot of it was just temporary.
Yeah. That's part of it. questions you keep coming in, and you should present more. Like,
well, I thought of presenting this time, and why isn't faith enough? Like, do you have to know? And what is it? What constitutes a testimony?
And yeah.
Altmeyer, I lived in Altmeyer for 28 years. I was in a bishopric for 4 years, first president, and first council, then a couple years BYU, 3 years. Maybe I took too much philosophy. I didn't vote for mission, but I never said I know the church is true.
Huh.
I mean, how do you bear testimony without flat out saying that?
Right.
You can do it. But, you know, I'm a committed Mormon. I believe it's true. I'm willing to pay my tithe and go to the temple and do what I have to do. But if I die and find out it wasn't true, I'll, okay.
I still have fun then.
So, anyway.
That's a great topic. No, that's very provocative here too. You should build a case for that, because we need to bend people's minds here just a little bit further. Maybe faith should be done.
Yeah, I mean, I conduct a couple of my interviews, and in my mind, if somebody wants to serve in the temple, they have to know. They have to flat out know the way that some people think you. Had religious experiences like the new guy who's the chairman of the board.
Oh, yeah, Jim.
He was having a real religious experience. I mean, you know, he was overcome. And that's great. I mean, he wouldn't have had that had he not been a Mormon. So when I did, I would conduct my temper.
I should move there. It sounds like cool people live there.
Well, I had a friend move in from the East Coast, so I introduced him to all the Democrats that I knew in Alpine. There were about five of them. Scott Kenny and Jill, you know, Brooke and Jill Durr, they're historians.
Uh-huh, yeah.
Yeah.
So, and they're there too, huh?
Yeah, they're there.
Wow.
But here's a statistic. The Deseret News blog published income and donations. Top 10 or something like that of Utah, and a good figure was maybe an income of 80, family household income maybe 80 and 6% tithing or 6% mm-hmm. donations. Alpine 120,000 donations, 12,000.
Huh?
Does everybody pay tithing in Alpine? No, but enough people are missionaries that their families
oh,
are
yeah.
in there. They're 400 and stuff.
Yeah, totally.
So, but my liberal friends. They struggle, so.
Yeah.
But, anyway. I
I don't feel sorry for him because I struggle when I come to so that's fine.
I'm glad you come, man. It's awesome to have you. All right, we'll see you later.
Thank you.